That I implored Hashem at that time, saying, and he's referring to the fact that he started davening to Hashem to enter Eretz Yisrael, because we know he was decreed upon him he shouldn't be able to enter the land of Israel because of the sin of hitting the rock, and Moshe was decreed not to go into Eretz Yisrael. But he said, I kept davening to Hashem, I implored Hashem that I should be allowed to go into Eretz Yisrael. We know from the commentaries that he actually began this tefillah, he began this prayer, and Rashi brings this, from the point at which they conquered Sichon and Og, those countries, those kings, which became part of Eretz Yisrael. And it was at that point, with the defeat of Sichon and Og, he thought maybe now there's an opportunity now with that success, he's going to be able to succeed in imploring Hashem to be able to enter Eretz Yisrael. But Hashem says no. Go to Pasuk 26. Says 25, 26, it says, yeah, 26, it says that Hashem was angry with me, and he said to me, you have to stop davening, essentially. Right? But he persisted in his davening, but Hashem said, eventually, you have to stop davening, right? I seem to recall somewhere that one of the commentaries says that had he continued to daven, then things would have changed. Mm. I have that in my head somewhere, but don't quote me on that. I was looking at the Mefarshim on that. Pasuk says, Hashem said to him, Rav Loch, Al Tosef Daber Eli Obedov Razeh, do not continue on this matter, speaking to me, imploring me about this matter. So again, Tzorach Ian, I don't know, I have to check to find out if there's any, and I didn't see anything, so I just remember it from somewhere. But this is the parasha, the passage over here describing the tefillah of Moshe. So this is why I called it, looking for the Medrash, I couldn't find a copy of it over here. But the Medrash says that, the Medrash uses this little passage over here to teach us different principles about davening, different principles about tefillah. The Eschanan al Hashem, I implored Hashem. The Medrash is medayik, and it analyzes the words of the Pasuk. El Hashem to Hashem implies a very, very quiet, private tefillah to Hashem. Very quiet and private. And it teaches us that when you're davening, to daven quietly. Not the other parts of davening, like Pesukah de Zimra and the Shema, etc., but the Shmoneh Esrei, the Amidah, has to be done very quietly and silently. We learn this from Chana as well, the prayer of Chana with Shmuel, with Eli. And so El Hashem implies to Hashem privately, in this private encounter with Hashem, that's number one. Be'esahi, at that time, this emphasis on that time specifically, in that time specifically, alludes to another principle of davening, and that is to daven at the right times, and to daven three times a day. We know this also from the Ovis, from the patriarchs, that they instituted three tefillahs, Maariv, Shacharis, and Mincha, right? And this already goes back to the times of the patriarchs, three times a day davening. But this is also alluded to over here, that a person has to daven. They shouldn't, the Medrash even says, don't think that you can pack all your davening into the morning or into 1 hour of the day. You should spread out the entire day with davening. The whole day should be circumscribed with davening, be'esahi, and it's alluding to Moshe doing that. All through the day he was davening, three times a day. Lamor, right, saying that, I think on that Medrash says, to have kavana, to have proper kavana. And the Medrash says that if a person has proper kavana when they daven with kavana, and they make sure to have kavana properly in davening, they're assured to be answered. They're assured to be answered. It's a very, very tremendous promise. But the Medrash also famously, and Rashi quotes this as well, the word ve'eschanan. Ve'eschanan is the shorish, the root of that word is chanan, chinun, and it means like supplication. So the Medrash says that there are 10 expressions of davening altogether. And if we talk about davening and prayer, but there are actually 10 words found in Tanakh which talk about tefillah, each one has a little bit of a different connotation. There's a whole book about it. Shimshon Pinkas wrote a whole sefer about it, a very, very famous book about that. And I'll go through them very, very quickly. Very quickly, Medrash goes through them. Sha'ava. Sha'ava means pleading with desperation. And these are words found in Tanakh. So really, it's teaching us that when a person davens, in the course of a person's davening, to try to capture a different emotion each time, to try to capture all the different emotions and feelings of davening. Sha'ava is pleading with desperation. Tsa'oka is crying out with words. Na'oka, right, is moaning as more of an expression of pain. Rina, singing in praise of Hashem. In good times, and an acceptance of one's situation in challenging times. Pegiya is entreaty, which means a repeated request, even if it appears denied, showing absolute trust that Hashem can do anything. Bitzor is self-fortification, praying in times of distress. Kriya is calling out to Hashem by name. Again, all these words are found in different contexts of Nipul is falling down with humility, recognizing a lack of power. Pilul means praying with judgment, recognizing Hashem as the ultimate truth. And then our pasuk over here, Tachanunim, Veschanan, Tachanunim, is supplications for an unearned gift. For an unearned gift. So that's what Moshe was saying. Like, even if I'm not, if I don't deserve this, please just give it to me as a free gift, as a matnas chinam, as a free gift. So all of these different expressions of feel, again, if you want to know more about it, there's a very, very good book by, it's called Gates of Prayer, I think it is, by Rishim Shem Pinchas, goes through the whole book all about these different expressions. But these are the different principles we learn from this pasuk, the Medrash pulls out of this pasuk. Another thing which Rashi quotes over here, very powerful idea, and if the last word of the pasuk is lemor, that Hashem said to, he said, I implored Hashem at that time, lemor, saying. Now we're familiar with the word lemor, saying, Yedab Hashem el Moshe lemor. It's one of the most common pesukim, that Hashem spoke to Moshe lemor, which means, normally it means lemor, to then tell the Jewish people X, Y, or Z. Yedab Hashem el Moshe, Hashem spoke to Moshe lemor, to tell the Jewish people X, Y, or Z. That's not what's happening over here, because this is not what the pasuk is saying. I implored Hashem at that time, lemor, saying. So you could interpret it to mean, I implored Hashem with the following words, X, Y, or Z. But Rashi says, no, lemor means something different over here. Very powerful. Rashi says that lemor over here is ze'echo mishloshim makomos. This is one of the three places you find in Tanakh. She'oma Moshe lifnei makom, that Moshe said before Hashem, Eini manichecha ad shetodieni imtasa she'ilasi imlav. I will not let go of you until you make known to me whether you'll answer my tefillah or not. I'm not going to let go of you. Lemor, to say that you should say back to me in response, I've answered your tefillah. I'm not going to let go. The words over here, I'm not going to, Eini manichecha, I will not leave you. I will not let go of you until you tell me that you've answered my tefillah. Really powerful. And the persistency and the insistency that Moshe is displaying. I'm holding on tight over here. I'm not going to let go. I want this. I need this. This is the right thing to do. Now, we've got to take this carefully, because a person should go ahead and daven for things which are wrong to do. Right? But if you're davening for something which is good, which is right, which is a healthy and good thing, then there's a concept of don't let go. Hold on to Hashem until he says yes. Never give up. Never, ever give up. So I was learning this week. You've got to hear this story. I was learning this week on Tuesday. Right? So I do the parasha every day. So I was late starting this week. So I started on Tuesday morning. So that's the pasuk which I was learning on Tuesday morning in my little seder before davening. So I get to this pasuk. I'm reading this. And yes, very inspired by that idea. So then I finished a few more pesukim, and I closed my chumash, and I went on to my Gemara, right? And I just, quote-unquote, happened to be up to Yuma Choftes Amud Aleph, Tractate Yuma, so I'm learning, 29a. So the Gemara there is discussing a pasuk in Tehillim about a comparison between Queen Esther, Ayala Sashach, Alam Natzeach, Ayala Sashach, it's a pasuk, it's a parak in Tehillim, which likens Queen Esther to the hind of the morning. A hind is a type of animal, the hind of the morning. So, but in the course of the Gemara is explaining different drushes of this pasuk, and one of them is that because the verse says ayeles hashachar, the hind of the shachar of the morning, the hind of the morning. So, what is the hind? What is the morning? So, the Gemara says that the word shachar, morning, can also mean tefillah as well. Oh. Right, of course, Rashi explains from the pasuk Yeshaya, it can mean tefillah as well, prayer. So shachar is prayer. So you could translate the pasuk of the hind of prayer, the hind of prayer. So the Gemara says, because what's the similarity between a hind and prayer? For just as a hind, as it grows, its antlers grow bigger and branch out and branch out and branch out. So also tefillah, that the more you daven, the more it branches out, and the stronger the davening becomes, and the more potent the davening becomes. So the more you daven, the more persistent, the more repeated tefillahs you do, it's like the antlers, it keeps branching out, and the tefillahs actually build upon themselves and become stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger. So I'm thinking, wow, unbelievable. I just learned this a few seconds ago in the Rashi, like the same thing, had nothing to do with each other. It's the same message, persistency in davening. And the Meiri, one of the commentaries in the Gemara, says exactly this. The Meiri says, Al yis yayishamana, don't give up on tefillah. Don't give up on davening. And also, Al yachzik atzma b'machbid matriach, don't consider yourself to be bothering Hashem by persisting in davening. You're not bothering Hashem. You're not bothering Hashem whatsoever. The Beis Elokim, one of the Meforshim explains that the idea of not bothering Hashem with repeated davening is that, unlike a human being, if you keep bothering someone and they said no already, and you keep bothering them, and you keep asking, but you're bothering them, you're irritating them. It's a chutzpah to keep doing that. With Hashem, it's not the case. Because the more you daven, the more you ask Hashem for what you need, what are you doing? You're inculcating and deepening your appreciation that He's the only source of what you want. He's the only source. The more you daven, it's actually increasing your awareness and your belief in the fact that He's the only source of your salvation. So therefore, He doesn't get bothered. He wants you to do that. He wants you to keep davening over and over again, more and more and more, to deepen your understanding and to really knock it home that He is the ultimate source of everything that you need in life. That's the idea of repeated davening. So I was looking at this Rashi, looking at this Gemara, and they sort of speak by chance juxtaposition of these two limudim. I was so excited. The night before, I was talking to somebody, and they were talking about their challenges, and I thought it would be a nice thing to send to this individual, to send this person this message which I just read in the Gemara. So I took a picture of it. I took a picture of the commentary of the Gemara with the commentary of the Meiri at the bottom about don't be worried about you sitting asking Hashem. And I WhatsApped it to this fellow right in the morning. Right, I was learning at 7:30. I just sent it to him. I figured he was up. He sends me a message back immediately. With a screenshot of something he was reading. And I have the book, actually. I have the same book over here, of the book he was reading from. I hope I can find the page over here. I didn't look it up before. Here it is, over here. So I have this. He took a picture of this page over here. He said, it's unbelievable. He says, I was just reading this. The minute I was sending him this, you know, idea, he was reading this book the same moment, and he was reading about tefillah and bitachon, about prayer and bitachon. And he talks about how, you know, I'll read part of it. It's self-evident that we do not always receive what we expect. Some opinions hold that this discrepancy stems from a deficiency in our bitachon. Bitachon means trust, reliance on Hashem. Others argue that trust and reliance on Hashem is not merely about obtaining what we desire, but rather understanding that what we receive is ultimately for our best. The Stipler, famous rabbi, expands on these viewpoints by delineating two levels of bitachon. There are two levels of trust in Hashem. On the first level, one prays for outcomes to align with their desires, yet accepts if this does not transpire, the outcome is still ultimately beneficial. But on a higher level, absolute bitachon, trust entails the conviction that one will indeed receive what one desires, a viewpoint held by many other commentaries as well. So there are two levels of trust in Hashem, which goes hand in hand with tefillah. That's why you're sending it back. That's why you were so inspired by this, by what I sent to him. Right? It goes hand in hand with tefillah, because tefillah is bitachon. Davening to Hashem is an expression of your bitachon, that this thing is going to come to fruition. The higher level of that is trusting, assuming you're doing something which is good, which is healthy, which is a beneficial and the right thing to do, and it's a good thing to do, then have trust and keep davening for it. Keep davening for it, because Hashem wants us to keep davening for us. That's what we learn from Moshe Rabbeinu. And there are many, many countless examples of this. This is a book called Bitachon. It's a very good book. It's called Bitachon, Trust in Hashem, written by this David Lieberman. He's a psychologist who lives in Lakewood. Very, very good book. Bitachon, Trust in Hashem. But this is what we learn. We learn from Moshe, persistency, don't give up, keep davening. How many times did he daven altogether? So we know there's another medrash as well. 515 times. How do we know that? Number one, it's alluded to in the gematria of the word Ve'eschanon. the gematria, the numerical value of those letters equals 515. But also, commentaries write that he actually started his tefillahs, he started this tefillah of davening I mentioned before, upon the battle and the defeat of Sichon and Og, right? And without going through all of the calculations, it turns out we know historically when that date was. And that date actually was on the 15th of Av, the 15th Tuba of the 15th of Av. We'll come back to that in a few minutes. But the 15th of Av was the day that they defeated Sichon and Og. And if you actually calculate how many days there are from that date until the date of his demise, which was the 7th of Adar, right? Moshe died on the 7th of Adar. But if you add how many days there are, and you factor in that you shouldn't daven for private personal needs on Shabbos and Yom Tov, so you can do the math. The Pnei Yeshua did the math, famous commentator did the math already for us, and it turns out to be that from the 15th of Av till the 7th of Adar, it adds up to, guess what? 516. So there's a problem because they're missing one. And the answer is because they defeated Sichon and Og during the day. And he didn't start his tefillahs for entry into Eretz Yisrael until the morning. So if he didn't, in his Maariv prayer the night before, he wasn't davening for that. So it adds up to 515. So the 515 tefillahs in his Shachar, in his Maariv Shachar and Mincha tefillah, entreating Hashem, imploring Hashem to get in, to be able to enter Eretz Yisrael 515 times altogether. So he says, that's the lesson over here. The lesson is 515 tefillahs, persistency, and that's what he did. So, but this began on the 15th of Av, right? Mm-hmm. Which brings us now, like swings us into tomorrow, because this year happens to be, it's very nice how it works out this year, because we're learning about this Ve'eschanan, and we're learning about how Ve'eschanan, this word, I started davening to Hashem 515 times, began on Tu B'Av, on the 15th of Av, which happens to be tomorrow. Mm. It's tomorrow because the 9th of Av was Sunday, so the 15th of Av is tomorrow. So fine, okay, that's a nice alignment, nice juxtaposition. But for those who know, are aware of the fact that there's a tremendous, tremendous, unbelievable dimension of the 15th of Av, which is shocking. And when you hear it, it's amazing, because we talk about Yom Tov and Pesach and Shavuos and all of the, coming up to Rosh Hashanah, the tremendous Yomim Tovim that we have as a Jewish people. You know, what's one of the most important Yomim Tovim is Yom Kippur, Dev Atonement, right? Pesach, Shavuos, all these other Yomim Tovim. Listen to this. The Mishnah says in Tainis 26b, it says, Amar Shim ben Gamliel, Lo hayu Yomim Tovim li Yisrael. There were no holidays, no Yom Tovim for the Jewish people, like Yom Kippur is one of them. Yom Kippur is one of them. There's no greater Yom Tov than Yom Kippur, but there's one inserted before that. Tu B'Av, the 15th of Av. There's no Yom Tovim like the 15th of Av, tomorrow, tonight and tomorrow. There's no Yom Tovim like the 15th of Av and Yom Kippur. Have you ever heard of that before? Yeah. You know, where's the Suda? Where's the Kiddush? Okay, this year we'll have a Suda and a Kiddush because it's on Shabbos. But if it falls out during the week, no one's ever heard of the Yom Tov of Tu B'Av on the same level, on the same par as Yom Kippur. Moreover, the Mishnah says that it was so celebratory that the Benos Yerushalayim, that the daughters of Yerushalayim would go out on those days, Bechli Lavan, in their white, beautiful dresses. And they would go out and they would essentially, and I'm not going to go into this discussion to itself, they would call out and say, Bachrim, boys, men, young men, choose a wife of us. Choose a wife from us. And they would do that. That's a whole different discussion why they did that. But this is how they expressed their joy of these days in Yom Kippur at that as well. But on Tu B'Av also. And then the Mishnah brings a pasuk to allude to this, a pasuk in Shir Hashirim, Tzenevarena. Go out and see Benos Tzion, the daughters of Tzion, the Melech Shlomo of King Solomon, Batarash Itrilo, with the crown of his mother, B'yom Chasunoso, on the day of his of his marriage on the day of the joy of his heart. It's a bit cryptic what the verse means, but this verse is being quoted as an allusion to these two special days, because Yom Chasunoso, the day of his wedding, is Yom Kippur, and Yom Simchas Libo, the day of the joy of his heart, the Marsha explains, is a reference to Tu B'Av, the 15th of Av. So two days, these two special days are alluded to in this pasuk, the day of the Chasna and the day of the Simchas Libo. So the day of the Chasna, the wedding, is understandable. It's Yom Kippur. Why is that the day of the wedding? Because that was the day upon which Moshe came down from the mountain a second time with the second Luchos to grant forgiveness to the Jewish people. So, you know, we always talk about Shavuos, the giving of the Torah, as being the day of the wedding. Right? But then that was lost because the Chata Egel, but it was restored with the second Luchos, the second tablets, which came down on Yom Kippur. So that became the real bona fide day of the wedding, the day of the union of the Jewish people with Hashem on Yom Kippur. So that's that. But Tu B'Av, the 15th of Av, and it's also the day of the Chasna. So the truth is the day of the Simchas Libo. The Marsha also explains that the two stages over here, the day of the wedding and then the day of the Simchas Libo, the day of the joy of one's heart, he actually splits it up and to say one is referring to the actual Kedushin, the marriage ceremony, and the second is the Chuppah, is the real kind of living together as husband and wife. So the marriage ceremony is Yom Kippur, that's when the ring is put onto the finger and the bond is created between the Jewish people and Hashem on Yom Kippur. But the Chuppah, is Tu B'Av, right? So when you go home today and you go to shul tomorrow, wish everyone Mazel Tov. So, you know, it's a Mazel Tov, it's a chuppah, it's the day of the chuppah. Tomorrow Tu B'Av is the day of the chuppah. What's going on? What does this all mean? And what's Tu B'Av? What is it all about? So the truth is the Gemara goes through explaining why, what happened on Tu B'Av? What happened on the 15th of Av, historically? So the Gemara goes through six reasons or six things which happened on Tu B'Av on the 15th of Av. So we'll go through them. The six things which happened, just briefly, is number one, and I'm not going to elaborate too much on each one of them, but in the times of the tribes, right, there was just very, very, just aerial view. The tribes were allowed to intermarry. When the Jewish people came over to the Jordan River into Eretz Israel, there was a restriction for a period of time when the tribes were not allowed to intermarry in order to maintain ancestral heritages. Mm-hmm. But then that decree or that rule was then eventually lifted. It was no longer necessary to keep this. And on the day that they rescinded, they lifted that rule of the restriction of the intermarriage of the tribes, Tu B'Av, the 15th of Av, right, number one. Number two, also, we learned this back in, I believe, Sefer Shoftim, quick advertisement, Wednesday nights. Our prophet's class will be starting, yeah, I'm telling you, you got to enjoy it. There will be, in a few weeks from now, we'll be starting the Book of Kings. The Book of Kings, which is amazing, all about the Beis Hamikdash, the third temple. Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Don't miss it. So when we did Shoftim, the Book of Judges, there was a terrible story about the tribe of Binyamin, and they did a terrible crime, a terrible sin, and they were restricted from again marrying among the tribes. And then that decree was also lifted on guess what day?
Tu B'Av,
the 15th of Av. The Jewish people, when they're traveling through the desert, after the sin of the spies, it was decreed they had to wander in the desert for 40 years. We're now at the end of that wandering through the desert right now, right? But many of them died between the age of 20 and 60, had to die out because of the sin of the spies. When did they die? How did they die?
So
the Gemara says that they died every Tisha B'Av.
Mm.
They used to dig their own graves, and they would die. Those who didn't come out died in the grave. But in the final year, they dug the graves, they went in, but no one died. And they thought maybe they made a mistake with the day. Because the 9th of Av, by the way, we know that's the ninth of Av is the day that the spies delivered the negative report about Israel, which decreed the whole, you know, 40 years of wandering in the desert. So on that 9th of Av, that last year, the last 9th of Av, no one died. So they wonder maybe they made a mistake with the calendar, and they waited until the middle of the month, until there was a full moon, the 15th of Av, and they saw that no one died. And they realized the decree is now over. The decree is over. Meisei Midbar stopped dying. Those who died in the desert stopped dying on the 15th of Av. That was the next tremendous thing on the 15th of Av. Another thing also, in the days of the first Beis Hamikdash, Yeravam ben Nevat, the terrible king who caused all sorts of havoc for the Jewish people and stopped them, brought Avodah Zarah, idolatry, into the land, put roadblocks to Yerushalayim to stop the pilgrimage travelers coming into Yerushalayim for their inspiration on the Yom Tovim. There were roadblocks. On the 15th of Av, they were taken away. And now the pilgrimages, the Aliyah L'Regel, was allowed to take place. There was also a terrible catastrophe. I think it was 130, 133 of the common era after the destruction of the Second Temple. Beitar, the city of Beitar, was completely annihilated and destroyed. There were hundreds of thousands of Jews who were killed and massacred by the Romans in Beitar. And a very big tragedy happened. They were never allowed to be buried. Their bodies remained there for a long time. Until when? The 15th of Av, when they were allowed to be buried properly. They got their proper Jewish burial on the 15th of Av. And the final thing, the sixth thing the Gemara says happened on Tuba of the 15th of Av, was the wood chopping ceremony, or the wood chopping avoda, was finally finished. What is that? They used a lot of wood in the base of Mikdash for the sacrifices, for the pyre on top of the altar in the temple. So wood was needed. They always had to chop wood in the forest to bring wood to the base of Mikdash. There are certain times of the year that the wood is better, where it's not too moist, it's not wormy and everything. So the wood necessary for the year supply of wood for the base of Mikdash, they finished the chopping of the wood. When?
Tuba'av.
Wow, how do you know that? On the 15th of Av, that's when they finished the process of getting the wood ready for the base of Mikdash for the year to come. Tuba'av. This is why Tuba'av is such a celebration. Now you understand. Wouldn't you be so excited when they stop chopping the wood? You know, it's a reason to party, right? So some of these things you understand that they're very happy occasions. That those who died in the desert stopped dying on Tuba'av, but to now put this on par on the same level as Yom Kippur, it's very puzzling. Very puzzling. Yeah. So I just want to give credit where credit is due. I heard this shared by last night by this Rabbi Shruli Bornstein, and he went through all of this. It was just beautiful to listen to. So he suggested, and it really does, I was thinking more about it, really does perfectly match, because this is Tuba'av. These are the six things which happened on Tuba'av. But it's coming right after Tisha B'Av, the 9th of Av. What were the things which happened on Tisha B'Av, on the 9th of Av?
Right? We don't have to talk about that.
Right, but what happened was the first base, let's go back to the very beginning. The spies came back from Israel, maligning Eretz Israel, slandering Eretz Israel. The first base of Mikdash was destroyed. The second base of Mikdash was destroyed. The massacre in Beitar also took place on Tisha B'Av. That massacre in Beitar took place on Tisha B'Av. And also the fifth one they speak about is the Turnus Rufus, the Roman, plowed the temple and the environs of the temple. Mm. These are the five big tragedies. There were many more tragedies which happened in future history beyond, but in the times of the Gemara, the Mishnah of the Gemara, and the Tanakh, so these are the five big tragedies which happened on the 9th of Av. If you think about the six celebrations of Tuba'av, they really map to those five things. Because think about it. First of all, the first one is easy, right? The spies came back slandering the land, and that decreed the death of the people in the desert. It stopped on Tuba'av. Mm. So what was decreed on the 9th of Av was terminated on the 15th of Av, mm-hmm. right? The second thing, the base of Mikdash, the destruction of the base of Mikdash. I mean, now let's just appreciate, what is the base of Mikdash all about? It's about the bond of the Jewish people to Hashem. It's the bond. It's the place where we get our inspiration, where we bond with Hashem, with people around us. It's all of the base of Mikdash is a mockum of unity. It's a place of unification, unity and unification of the Jewish people to Hashem. So on Tuba'av, those blockages were taken away. The roadblocks to stop the pilgrims to go to Eretz Israel, those roadblocks were taken away to then allow that unity of the Jewish people to then once again flourish in the base of Mikdash. And then also the massacring of Beitar, right? The terrible massacres of Beitar that was remedied on Tuba'av as well. It was all remedied. They're all mapping together. The roadblocks, the base of Mikdash. You know, the only part which is a little bit more difficult. Oh, the tribes intermarrying with each other. Think about what does that mean? The allowance for all of the tribes now intermarriage sounds like a bad word. Was like intermarriage within the Jewish people, intermarriage with, and to allow the full blown expression of connection of families within the Jewish people. It's unity. It's unification. It's the bond husband and wife. I mean, that's the whole idea of marriage. The marriage of husband and wife is a metaphor for the marriage between Hashem and the Jewish people. That's what a marriage is about. So Tu B'Av is a day of unification. It's a day of marriage. It's a day of connection. It's the day of restoration of all of the fragmentation which was brought about on Tisha B'Av. What was the wood chopping ceremony? Tuz Rufus plows the base of Mikdash, plows it over. It's like just physically plowing it over. You think about wood being tossed all over the place, and the kind of this the physical structure of the avoda, the base of Mikdash, restored once again, on, or at least not restored once again, but it's recognized on Tu B'Av. It's recognized. We have the supplies for the base of Mikdash. We have all the wood for the base of Mikdash. The base of Mikdash is able to be run and operated properly. Tu B'Av. So Tu B'Av is the tikkun for Tisha B'Av. It's the tikkun for Tisha B'Av. It's the remedy for Tisha B'Av. It's the day of bonding. It's the day of restoration of the relationship. It's the day of the unity of the Jewish people with Hashem. It's the day of the unity between husband and wife, forming marriages, forging marriages. It's a day of beautiful, beautiful unity. It's a day of unity. It's also the seventh day after Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av is a day of mourning, of tragedy, of destruction, of absolute destruction. On the day that a person loses, God forbid, Shiva begins, the days of Shiva. So when do you get up after Shiva? On the seventh day. You don't have to go through the entire seventh day. You get up at the beginning of the seventh day. Tu B'Av is getting up from Shiva. We're now getting up. Tomorrow we're getting up from Shiva, from the destruction of Tisha B'Av. We're now rising up and experiencing comfort, tachanunim. Comfort. And what is this Shabbos called? Shabbos Nachamu. It's the Shabbos of Nachamu. It's the Shabbos of comfort. Commentaries ask, if Tu B'Av is such a celebration, it's such a, you know, where is the Suda? So they say, the Ritva, one of the Rishonim, says that the Suda of Tu B'Av is actually, on other years, Tu B'Av may fall out during the week, but the Suda of Tu B'Av is actually celebrated on Shabbos Nachamu. Because Tu B'Av and comfort, because it's the remedy for the destruction of Tisha B'Av, is always, therefore we coincide the Suda of Tu B'Av with the Suda of Shabbos, the meals of Shabbos. This year it's beautiful because we have the coming together of all of the three things together. So when we're having our Suda Shabbos tomorrow, especially Suda Shabbos tomorrow, tonight and tomorrow, we're not just having a regular Shabbos Suda, we're having a Suda of Tu B'Av. It's the Suda of Tu B'Av for the comfort, for the Nechama, the comforting that Hashem has given to us and is giving to us for the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash and all of that fragmentation and destruction and separation, dispersion and destruction which happened on Tisha B'Av is now being completely remedied now on Tu B'Av. And that's why it's the culmination of the wedding of Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, we think Yom Kippur is after Tu B'Av. It's not true, because we're in 5785 right now. So we're now at the end of 5785, which began on Yom Kippur, 11 months ago. So Tu B'Av actually comes after Yom Kippur. So Tu B'Av is now the chuppah, is the true unification, the unification of the Jewish people and Hashem on Tu B'Av, after the chasna, the kedushin of Yom Kippur, which happened last year. So now we're really rising up to a higher level over here. And the potential of this day is really remarkable. It's a potential of unity. It's a potential of unification. It's a potential of bondness, of bonding together with Hashem. It's a potential of relationships being bonded together as well. That's why Tu B'Av is also classically a day of tefillahs for shidduchim as well, for marriages. And it's a day of this tremendous bond. Now we understand, therefore, that Moshe began on this day. His davening of his imploring, even though historically it corresponded to the day of the defeat of Sichon and Og, right? But that's more perhaps on a superficial level. But on a deeper level, this day is so powerful. This day is a day of tremendous power of bonding with Hashem and rectifying the fragmentation, the separation. This is a day of really starting our tefillahs and davening with imploring, davening to Hashem that everything should be restored to us. And therefore we should, now it's an interesting thing because you're not supposed to really daven for personal needs on Shabbos, right? But certainly when it comes to spiritual needs, You're allowed to daven for spiritual needs on Shabbos and Yom Tov. So it's okay. So if tomorrow, tonight and tomorrow, really appreciate Tu B'Av as being a day of tremendous potential of a bond, of a deeper bond. So when I say this, so we can think about the things which block us, the things which create barrier for us, because Tisha B'Av is all about those barriers being so present and so destructive. Tu B'Av is the exact opposite. It's the elimination of barriers, the elimination of all the blockage, the roadblocks. Think about the roadblocks to Yerushalayim were taken away on Tu B'Av. The roadblocks to our heart are going to be taken away on Tu B'Av. So think about, what are my blockages? What am I holding on to so tightly and not letting go of? What are my roadblocks to connect to Hashem? What are my roadblocks in my spiritual journey in life? What are my roadblocks? Daven to Hashem, please HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please Hashem, implore Him over and over again. Be persistent, don't give up, don't think you're bothering Him. Please Hashem, help me to soften my heart, to get rid of those roadblocks that I know I'm stubbornly holding on to. And daven and daven and daven and never give up. And that's what we learn from Moshe, right? And so it's really a beautiful, amazing juxtaposition of all these ideas together tomorrow. So we always zocha, let's just say, a quick bracha, a quick tefillah, and we can give, again, may Hashem help us all in our journey to Yerushalayim, our journey to our heart, our journey to Hashem, that all the roadblocks should be taken away and never give up, don't give up, keep davening and keep davening and keep trusting in Hashem that things will happen.